welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Today's presentation is part two of Behind a Mask, based on a novella by Louisa May Alcott, writing under the pen name A.M. Barnard. When we left the Coventry family last week, Mrs. Coventry had just welcomed Jean Muir, a new governess, to tutor her young daughter, Bella. Miss Muir was recommended by Lady Sydney, as Miss Muir had to leave that house because of some action of her son. Mrs. Coventry, Bella, and Bella's uncle Sir John were charmed by Miss Muir, and Bella's older brother Edward fell in love with her. The oldest brother Gerald and his cousin Lucia Beaufort, who was soon to be betrothed to Gerald, distrust Miss Muir, and Gerald secured a position away in London for Edward. When Miss Muir enlisted Gerald's help to confront Edward about his unwanted advances, Edward stabbed Gerald in a fit of jealousy. He immediately regretted his actions and agreed to go to London. Miss Muir impresses Gerald by attending skillfully to his wounds, but she has been warned by Lucia to stay away from him. A servant came running after Gerald and gave him a letter, which he stuffed into a pocket and went to the hall where Sir John lived. Miss Muir was not there.
How are you today, sir?
Comfortable but dull. So I want you to bring the girls over this evening. Tonight we are to have merrymaking, as we used to do when Ned was here.
Very well, sir. I'll bring them. We've all been a little out of sorts since the lad left, and some jollity will do us good.
Send Miss Muir with them, a very charming girl, Gerald. I'm much interested in her, both on her own account and on her mother's.
Her mother's? Her, what do you know of her mother?
Her mother was Lady Grace Howard, who ran away with a poor Scotch minister 20 years ago. The family cast her off, and she lived and died so obscurely that very little is known of her, except that she left an orphan girl at some small French pension. This is the girl, and a fine girl, too. I'm surprised that you did not know this.
So am I, but it is like her not to tell. She is a strange, proud creature. Lady Howard's daughter. Upon my word, that is a discovery.
She has had a hard life of it, this poor little girl. But she has a brave spirit and will make her way anywhere.
I wonder if Lady Sydney was aware of this.
No, Jean said she did not wish to be pitied, and so told nothing to the mother. I think the son knew, but that was a delicate point, and I ask no questions.
That evening, when everyone had arrived, the hall was prepared for a dramatic evening. Bella had Gerald and Miss Muir reenact the painting in the front hall of an escaping pair of star-crossed lovers. As Gerald knelt there with a maiden heart throbbing against his cheek, for the first time in his life, he felt the indescribable spell of womanhood, and looked the ardent lover to perfection. After the scenes were over, Lucia came down looking lovely in a classical costume, but Gerald scarcely saw her, and, when the merriment was at its height, he slipped away. Alone in the garden, he found Miss Muir, and paused to watch her a moment before he spoke.
"Shall I bring you some supper, Miss Muir?"
"Supper? No, thank you. I want nothing but advice, and that I dare not ask of anyone."
"Everyone has a right to ask help. You certainly helped me when I was injured. Can I help you?"
"Ah, you forget. The freedom of this glorious evening blinds you to reality. For a moment, I cease to be a servant, and for a moment, you treat me as an equal."
"I treat you as an equal because you are one. And when I offered help, it was not to my sister's governess alone, but to Lady Howard's daughter."
"Who told you that?"
"My uncle. Do not reproach him. It shall go no further. Are you sorry that I know?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"Because I will not be pitied. Do not be kind. It destroys the only barrier now left between us. Be cold to me as before. Forget what I am, and let me go on my way, unknown, unpitied, and unloved."
"You need have no fears for me. Lucia will tell you what an iceberg I am."
"Then Lucia would tell me wrong. I know you better than she does, and I see..."
"What? Tell me."
"Under the ice I see fire, and warn you to beware lest it prove a volcano."
"You are right. I am not what I seem. And my indolent indifference is just the mask under which I conceal my real self. I could be as passionate, as energetic, and aspiring as Ned if I had any aim in life. I have none, and so I am what you once called me, a thing to pity and despise."
"I never said that."
"Not in those words, perhaps, but you looked it and thought it, though you phrased it more mildly. I am beginning to wake from my disgraceful idleness and long for some work that shall make a man of me. Why do you go? I annoy you with my confessions? Pardon me. They are the first I ever made, and they shall be the last.
No, oh no. I am too much honored by your confidence. But has not Miss Beaufort the first right to be your confidant?
What he would have said was checked by the sight of a half-open letter which fell from Jean's dress as she moved away. Mechanically, he took it up to return it. Jean snatched it from him.
Did you read that? What did you see? Tell me. Tell me on your honor.
On my honor, I saw nothing but this single sentence. By the love I bear you, believe what I say. I know the hand. I guess the purport of the letter, and as a friend of Sidney, I earnestly desire to help you if I can. Is this the matter upon which you want advice?
Yes.
Let me guess it, and spare you the pain of telling.
You know that Sidney loved me, that I refused him and went away, but you do not know that his importunities nearly drove me wild, that he threatened to rob me of my only treasure, my good name, and in desperation I tried to kill myself. His mother promised not to betray where I had gone, but he found me out and wrote to me. The letter I asked you to take to Lady Sidney was a reply to him, imploring him to leave me in peace. You failed to deliver it, and I was glad, for I thought silence might be the best approach. No, this is a more passionate appeal than ever, and he vows he will never desist from his endeavors until I am protected by another.
Is Ned the man who can protect you?
No.
Who then?
Why do you torment me with such questions?
Miss Muir, nay, I will say Jean. You are needlessly alarmed. I think you wrong Sidney. Let me see him or write to him. He is my friend. He will listen to me. Of that I am sure.
Be sure of nothing. Nothing can control his headstrong will. Promise me you will not see or write to him. I do not want any harm to befall you or your brother. You promise me, Mr. Coventry?
I promise. But in return, you must promise to let me give what help I can. And, Jean, never say again that you are friendless.
You are so kind. God bless you for it. But I dare not accept your friendship. She will not permit it, and I have no right to mar her peace.
Who will not permit it?
Miss Beaufort.
Hang Miss Beaufort!
I hear the others coming. That laugh betrayed us. I must go.
I do indeed forget myself. I have not given my advice yet.
Thanks. I no longer need it. I have decided for myself to brave my enemy.
Good. But what decided you so suddenly?
The finding of a friend.
The next morning, Gerald found Miss Muir sitting in the recess of a deep window, in a low lounging chair, working at an embroidery frame. Remembering his letter from the day before, he tore it open and began to read it in front of her.
Must have come from Sydney. I'm off to Baden. Come and join me, then you'll be out of harm's way. For if you fall in love with J.M. and you can't escape if you stay where she is, you will incur the trifling inconvenience of having your brains blown out by yours truly, F.R. Sidney? The man is mad. What the deuce does he mean by writing to me in this style? Join him, not I. And as for this threat, I laugh at it. I'm so sorry, Jean. This headstrong fool seems bent on tormenting you.
Don't upset yourself unnecessarily on my behalf. If you have excess energy, put them to some good purpose and put your mother's basket of silks in order. They are in a tangle, and it will please her to know that you did it as your brother used to.
Hercules at the distaff.
We're being watched.
By whom?
Hush, let it pass. I am used to it.
But I am not, and I'll not submit to it. Who's that over there? Dean, so, Miss Beaufort sent you to eavesdrop. Tell your mistress I desire to see her in the library. Now go, Dean, and be careful in the future if you wish to stay in this house.
I am sorry. I have made fresh trouble for poor Miss Lucia.
I am not betrothed to my cousin, but you, like all the rest, seem bent on believing that I am. Hitherto I have cared too little about the matter to settle it, but now I shall prove beyond all doubt that I am free.
Poor Lucia, who will comfort her?
Jean, I have tried to love her, but I cannot. Ought I to deceive her and make myself miserable to please my family? Something stronger than my own will controls me. Jean, I must speak. Hear me. I cannot love my cousin because I love you.
Stop. I will not hear you while any promise binds you to another. Remember your mother's wishes, Lucia's hopes, Edward's last words, your own pride, my humble lot. You forget yourself, Mr. Coventry. Think well before you speak. Weigh the cost of this act and recollect who I am before you insult me by any transient passions, any false vows.
I have thought, and do weigh the cost, and I swear that I desire to woo you as humbly, honestly, as I would any lady in the land. Do I stoop in loving my equal in rank? Poverty is no disgrace, and the courage with which you bear it makes it beautiful. I should have broken with Lucia before I spoke, but I could not control myself. My mother loves you and will be happy in my happiness. Edward must forgive me, for I have tried to do my best, but love is irresistible. Tell me, Jean, is there any hope for me?
You must go to Miss Beaufort at once and be kind for my sake, Gerald.
My little Jean, for your sake I can be anything. Wait for me in the garden, Jean.
With a tranquil smile, Miss Muir walked away until she heard Bella's voice following her.
I've got a letter from Ned, and here's a tiny note for you. Mine is a very odd, hasty letter, with no news in it, except his meeting with Sidney. I hope yours is better, or it won't be very satisfactory.
Thank you, Bella. I will go to the garden to read it.
I have seen Sidney. He has told me all. And hard as I found it to believe, it was impossible to doubt. For he has discovered proofs which cannot be denied. I make no reproaches, shall demand no confession or atonement, for I cannot forget that I once loved you. I give you 3 days to find another home, before I return to tell the family who you are. Go at once, I beseech you, and spare me the pain of seeing your disgrace.
Slowly, steadily, she read the note twice. Presently she drew a long breath, tore up the letter, and, rising, went toward the hall. Setting her teeth and clenching her hands, she went through the twilight to find Sir John.
You look tired, my dear. Never mind the reading tonight. Rest yourself and let the book go.
Thank you, sir. I am tired, but I'd rather read, else the book will not be finished before I go.
Go, child. Where are you going?
Oh, you are too kind, too generous. How can I go away and leave my one friend?
Tell me everything, child, and let your friend help you if he can.
I will tell you, for I have no one else to turn to. I must go away because Mr. Coventry has been weak enough to love me.
What, Gerald?
Yes. Today he told me this, so I ran to you to help me prevent him from disappointing his family.
Then you do not love him. Is it possible?
No. I do not love him.
Yet he is all that women usually find attractive. How is it that you have escaped, Jean?
I love someone else. I must go, but it seems so hard to leave this safe and happy home and wander away into the wide, cold world again. You have all been too kind to me, and now separation breaks my heart.
This man who you love, can he not help you?
He could if he knew. But he must not.
Why not?
Because I am too proud to own it.
He loves you, my child?
I do not know. I dare not hope it.
May I know the name?
No, no, let me go. I cannot bear this questioning.
Forgive me, and let me do what I may. Rest here quietly. I'll write a letter to a good friend of mine who will find you a home if you leave us.
While Sir John wrote the letter in his study, Jean's eyes roved about the room, spotting a fine miniature of Sir John. As if obeying an irresistible impulse, she took it down, looked long and fondly at it, and pressed it to her lips and seemed to weep over it. A sound startled her, and she dropped the picture as she uttered a faint cry. John stood before her with an expression which she could not mistake.
Jean, why did you do that? Tell me, is the name John Coventry? Jean, shall I go back and write the letter, or may I stay and tell you that the old man loves you more than a daughter?
Some hours later, Jean left the hall and hurried toward the house, anxious to escape Gerald. But he was waiting for her, and she was forced to meet him.
How could you linger so long and keep me in suspense? I should have come to bring you home, but Lucia detained me, and when I got away, I saw my uncle had forestalled me. I shall be jealous of the old gentleman if he is so devoted. Jean, tell me one thing. I am free as air now, and have a right to speak. Do you love me?
Before I answer, tell me of your interview with Lucia. I have a right to know.
I told her that I did not, could not, love her, that I had submitted to my mother's wish, and for a time had felt tacitly bound to her, though no words had passed between us. And now I demanded my liberty, regretting that the separation was not mutually desired.
And she, what did she say? How did she bear it?
Must I tell you?
Yes, tell me everything. I know she hates me, and I forgive her, knowing that I should hate any woman who you loved.
You make a slave of me already. How do you do it? I never obeyed a woman before. Jean, I think you are a witch. Scotland is the home of weird, uncanny creatures who take lovely shapes for the bedevilment of poor, weak souls. Are you one of those fair deceivers?
You are complimentary. I am a witch, and one day my disguise will drop away, and you will see me as I am, old, ugly, bad, and lost. Beware of me. I've warned you. Now love me at your peril. Will you tell me what I ask before I answer your question, Mr. Coventry?
What Lucia said of you? Well, it was this.
Beware of Miss Muir. We instinctively distrusted her when we had no cause. I believe in instincts, and mine have never changed, for she has not tried to delude me. Her art is wonderful. I feel, yet cannot explain or detect it. She has brought sorrow and dissension into this hitherto happy family. She can harm me no further. You, she will ruin if she can. Beware of her, or you will bitterly repent your blind infatuation.
And what answer did you make?
I told her that I loved you, in spite of myself, and would make you my wife in the face of all opposition. Now, Jean, your answer.
Give me 3 days to think of it. Good night.
And gliding from him, she vanished into the house, leaving him to roam about half the night, tormented with remorse, suspense, and the old distrust. The next afternoon, Sir John departed the hall without telling any of his family why he had left. The following morning, Jean was walking in the garden when suddenly Gerald, on horseback, dashed out of the stables toward the gate.
Mr. Coventry, has anything happened?
I just got the message. Dreadful accident on the railroad, just the other side of Croydon.
The noon train? Was Sir John on it? Quick, tell me.
It was that train, but whether Sir John was in it or not, we don't know. For the guard was killed, and everything is in such confusion that nothing can be certain. We were at work getting out the dead and wounded.
The day wore on, and no news came. At dark, a sudden cry rang through the house, and Jean rushed down to learn the cause. Bella was standing in the hall, holding a letter, while a group of excited servants hovered near her.
What is it?
I just received this from Gerald.
Dear Bella, Uncle is safe. He did not go in the noon train, but several persons are sure that Ned was there. No trace of him as yet, but many bodies are in the river, under the ruins of the bridge, and I am doing my best to find the poor lad, if he is there. I hope it is a false report, and he is safe with his regiment. Keep this from my mother till we are sure. Miss Muir will comfort and sustain you. Hope for the best, dear. Yours, G.C.
At dawn, Gerald came home exhausted and brought no tiding of the missing man. He went to his room, Bella followed to wait on him, and Jean roamed through the house and grounds, unable to rest. The morning was far spent when the messenger arrived. Jean went to Gerald after he had spoke with the man.
Is he found?
Yes.
You're sure?
They are certain, but I must go look.
Is he alive?
No. The body has the uniform and the hand with his ring on it.
Jean crept into the garden like a guilty thing, trying to hide the satisfaction which struggled with pity for so sad an end for this brave young life. She got no further, for, turning as she spoke, she stood face to face with Edward.
They told me you were dead.
And you were glad to believe it. No, it was my comrade, young Courtney, who unconsciously deceived you all and lost his life, as I should have done, if I had not gone to Ascot after seeing him off yesterday. I went there to make inquiries concerning you and was well satisfied. Why are you still here?
The 3 days are not over yet. I hold you to your promise. Before night I shall be gone. Till then you will be silent, if you have honor enough to keep your word.
I have. It is now 2. The train leaves for London at 6:30. A carriage will wait for you at the side door. Allow me to advise you to go then, for the instant dinner is over, I shall speak.
Just as Edward left, Jean heard a carriage drive around and went down to meet it. Out of the carriage stepped Sir John.
My little girl, did you think I had deserted you? Come, I've brought the parson willing to marry us, and everything is set. Are you ready, Jean? Do you repent your choice, my child?
No, no, I am ready. I am only too happy to become your wife, dear, generous Sir John.
Later that evening at the Coventry home, the first excitement of Edward's return had subsided, and the man spoke on a more grave matter.
Jean Muir has deceived us all.
Stop! I will not listen to any false tales against her. The poor girl has enemies who belie her.
For the honor of the family, you must listen and learn what fools she has made of us. I met Sidney, and he begged me to beware of her. Nay, listen, Gerald. Her own letters convict her. She tried to charm Sidney as she did us, and nearly succeeded in inducing him to marry her. Rash and wild as he is still a gentleman, and when an incautious word of hers roused his suspicions, he refused to make her his wife. A stormy scene ensued, and, hoping to intimidate him, she feigned to stab herself as if in despair. She did wound herself, but failed to gain her point and insisted upon going to a hospital to die. Lady Sidney, good, simple soul, believed the girl's version of the story.
But, Ned, are you sure of all this? Is Sidney to be believed?
To convince you, I'll read Jean's letters before I say more. They were written to an accomplice and were purchased by Sidney. The first was written a few days after she arrived.
Dear Hortense, another failure. Sidney was more wily than I thought. His mother is a poor, weak creature whom I could use as I would, and through her I found an excellent place. A sick mother, silly daughter, and 2 eligible sons. Well, my dear, I got up in the meek style. They are an intensely proud family, but I can humble them all, I think, by captivating the sons, and when they have committed themselves, cast them off and marry the old uncle whose title takes my fancy.
She never wrote that. It is impossible. A woman could not do it.
She did write it. I posted some of those letters myself. Go on, Ned.
She continues.
The young master, monsieur, is well worth winning. But I prefer the title, and as the uncle is a hale, handsome gentleman, I can't wait for him to die. Though Monsieur is very charming, with his elegant languor and his heart so fast asleep, no woman has had power to wake it yet. He knows, S, and evidently suspects something. I must watch him and keep the truth from him if possible.
This is the second letter, and contains something which will surprise you.
Hortense, you know my handsome, dissipated father married a lady of rank, Lady Howard, for his second wife. I never saw her but once. Finding that this good Sir Jay knew something of Lady Howard, and being sure that he did not know that the death of her little daughter, I boldly said I was the child, and told a pitiful tale of my early life. It worked like a charm. He told Monsieur, and both felt the most chivalrous compassion for Lady Howard's daughter. Another little event I must tell you. My quick eye caught sight of a letter in the hand of S one night. I penned a few lines in his hasty style and replaced the letter, and Monsieur was none the wiser. What fools men are!
She is right. Send for Sir John. I am mortally afraid of this creature. Take her away. Do something to her. My poor Bella, what a companion for you. Send for Sir John at once.
I have already sent, and while we wait, let me finish this story. She is 30, not 19. She once lived the reckless life of an actress before divorcing her actor husband and trying to pass herself off as a governess. Now, no one knows the truth but Sidney and ourselves. We will leave this dangerous woman to the fate which will surely overtake her.
Thank you. It has overtaken her, and a very happy one she finds it.
How dare you return? How dare you insult us by coming back to enjoy the mischief you have done? Uncle, you do not know that woman.
Hush, boy. I will not listen to a word unless you remember where you are.
Remember your promise. Love me, forgive me, protect me, and do not listen to their accusations.
I will. Have no fears, my child.
Here, look at these letters, sir, and let them speak.
I will take them, but I will not look at them. I will look at nothing, hear nothing, believe nothing which can in any way lessen my respect and affection for this young lady. She has prepared me for this. I know that both of you are unsuccessful lovers, and this explains your unjust, uncourteous treatment now. We all have committed faults and follies. I freely forgive Jean hers, and desire to know nothing of them from your lips. If she has innocently offended, pardon it for my sake, and forget the past.
Allow me, John. I have a better place for those letters in the fireplace.
No! She's burning them!
You may degrade yourselves to the work of detectives, but I am not a prisoner yet. Poor Jean Muir you might harm, but Lady Coventry is beyond your reach.
Lady Coventry?
I, my dear and honored wife, receive her as such, and for my sake, forbear all further accusation. I know what I have done. I have no fear that I shall repent it. We are going away for a little while, and when we return, let the old life return again, unchanged except that Jean makes sunshine for me as well as for you.
May I ask how those letters came into your possession?
In tracing out your past life, Sidney found your friend Hortense. She was poor, money bribed her, and your letters were given up to him as soon as received. Traitors are always betrayed in the end.
Remember that, Gerald, and allow me to hope that in wedding you will be happier than in wooing. Receive my congratulations, Miss Beaufort. Edward, Bella, Mrs. Coventry, you have been kind to me. I thank you for it, and will repay it if I can. To you, Sir John, I will acknowledge that I am not worthy to be your wife, and to you I will solemnly promise to devote my life to your happiness. For his sake, forgive me, and let there be peace between us.
Lady Coventry's carriage.
What say you, Gerald? Is not the last scene better than the first?
We hope you have enjoyed part 2 of Behind a Mask, based on a novella by Louisa May Alcott. Our producer was Darren Helwich, and the story was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan and Hillary Carter. Our players were Ali Cascio as Lucia Beaufort, Brad Buchanan as Gerald Coventry, Joe Bogue as Edward Coventry, Val Davis as Jean Muir, Dave Collins as Sir John Coventry, Ella Folkerts as Bella Coventry, and Maggie Henson as Mrs. Coventry. This is your narrator, Hillary Carter, thanking you for listening to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater on KBIA. In the meantime, we hope you will join us for the stage shows at the newly erected Maplewood Barn. See you there!